This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 16th of October 2015 on Monocle 24. Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Gillian DeBias. Now this week, we're going to continue our look at some of the more intriguing films showcased at this year's London Film Festival. Up for discussion today will be Trumbo, the story of Hollywood blacklisting during the 1940s, High Rise, Ben Wheatley's adaptation of the notorious dystopian J.G. Ballard novel, and finally we'll turn to Danny Boyle's Steve Jobs biopic starring Michael Fassbender. That's all to come right here on the Monocle Arts Review. Stay tuned. And let's get started. Joining me in studio to share her opinions is Monocle friend and film critic Karen Krasanovich, who has selflessly installed herself in darkened rooms for the past 2 weeks to bring us her highlights from this year's festival. Well, welcome to the show, Karen. And first of all, as we approach its end, how has it been for you?
It's been a really interesting festival. I think there's been a very, very strong lineup and a lot of films that people, I think, are very excited about, which is nice. It's not all art house. It's not all foreign language. It's not all difficult films. There are some really popular films that people are going to really want to see, which is nice for a film festival to do.
And talk about, which gets you sort of started for the cinema season as winter hunkers down.
There's not a single film in the festival. For example, there was a horror film I would have loved to have talked about called The Witch, which everybody's talking about. So every film in the festival really got people conversing about the whole medium, which is lovely.
And so to what we're going to be doing, we're going to start with our first of three films up for discussion. Trumbo is the new American drama from Jay Roach, which focuses on Hollywood in the 1940s when many famous figures were blacklisted for their communist sympathies. Amongst them was Oscar-winning screenwriter Dalton Trumbo. And the film follows his fight against US government and studio bosses. This film premiered at the Toronto Film Festival in September and received 5 minutes standing ovation. Now, Karen, what was the British reaction?
Well, the British reaction, now I didn't see it in a critic's screening. I sat in a public screening, which I thought was very interesting, because there were a lot of laughs. People were laughing left, right, and center. And the strength of this, it was written by John McNamara, the strength of this film is not just Bryan Cranston's leading performance in as Trumbo, who's an adorable guy. You think, wow, I didn't know that Hollywood writers could be so adorable. But the dialogue is credibly funny, and I have to say that the audience that I sat with was probably slightly older people, but they were really, really enjoying it, which is unusual.
Well, let's have a little listen to a clip from the film Trumbo.
You talk like a radical, but you live like a rich guy.
It's the perfect combination. The radical may fight the purity of Jesus, but the rich guy wins with the cunning of Satan.
Your next deal is going to make you the highest paid writer in Hollywood.
Where do I sign?
Are you not, or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party?
Many questions can be answered yes or no only by a moron or a slave.
No studio will ever employ a member of the Communist Party.
Decent Americans feel that Hollywood is just a haven for overpaid traitors.
Woody, I got nothing to say to you.
A little sampler there from the film Trumbo. Now, based on a true story. And what an amazing true story.
Mm. Oh, it absolutely is. Now, I haven't read the book that this is based on. But as we know, there was an enormous blacklist operating in Hollywood for many years and prevented many talented people from earning a living. And as Trumbo points out, people lost their homes, their families were ruined, some people committed suicide, they died from the stress. This is very, very serious, and it carried on for a long time. People had to find ways to work. And this is really the triumph of Trumbo, of how he, I don't want to give too much away, but how he actually manages to work his way through the system and let his genius succeed.
And I didn't realize it, but and I'm not giving too much away because it is in the trailer, but that Trumbo was responsible for the screenplay of Spartacus.
Yes.
And if you know that film, that battle and the fight and the voices, it sort of all makes sense, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, there's an actor who, there are several actors. It's very difficult to have an actor play, for example, Kirk Douglas, because we all know what he looks like. But there is an actor who looks very much like him. And it's wonderful to see this reenacted. And I have to say that Helen Mirren gets the Wicked Witch Award for playing Hedda Hopper, who is probably one of the most evil people in Hollywood possible. She has a new hat and something terrible to say in every scene.
Great casting, and lucky for her. Now, this film, I suppose we're starting at the time of the year when we look at contenders for the Oscar, but it's done very well at box office. Awards aside, it's done very well at the box office.
Yes, it has. I'm not sure it is a triumph of acting as far as Oscar goes. Oscar usually likes, well, number one, this is very close to being a comedy. It's a dramatic comedy, I suppose, or a comedic drama. Generally, Oscar doesn't like that kind of thing. I think Bryan Cranston is amazing. I think the makeup's a little heavy for the period, but it's a wonderful ensemble piece, and it's great fun. And John Goodman, of course, is wonderful, as well as Elle Fanning and Diane Lane.
Well, Trumbo is out in American cinemas on November 6th and in Canada on November 20th, though it won't be out until February of next year in the UK, Sweden and Brazil. Now, let's move on to Ben Wheatley's adaptation of J.G. Ballard's novel High Rise, which follows the breakdown of social class within a brand new apartment tower. Known for his dark satirical films, is Wheatley a good choice for this adaptation?
Well, I have to say I didn't read the book. And I make it a point not to read books, generally, unless I've read them already. A film is a film and a book is a book. And I don't like to really make comparisons unless my heart's set on it. But I found this incredibly exciting. I wasn't crazy about Ben Wheatley's film Sightseers. I'm not British enough to really understand the hilarity of a caravan. But I did love Kill List. And I think that he captures a sense of the period, for example, of the 70s, that if you've seen something like the original, let's say, Logan's Run, it's that kind of glossy excitement, that looking forward to the future, that the future is going to be more fashionable and we're going to live better and it's going to be more exciting socially. And High Rise is all about that.
We searched and searched, but we couldn't find a trailer for this film. So could you just summarize the concept for us?
Well, from what I can understand, because it is quite stylized, and it is getting mixed reviews, even though I think it's a new classic. It really feels like a new classic. Tom Hiddleston is a young doctor who moves in. It's London, 1975. Moves into a newfangled high-rise apartment. He lives by himself. His name is Robert Lang. And the architect, as we find out later, lives on the roof in the penthouse with his wife, who has a horse on the roof. So anyway, that's Jeremy Irons. And Tom Hiddleston above him, above Robert Lang's apartment, is Charlotte, played by Sienna Miller. And they have parties up and down, and they realize that the families live on the bottom floors. It's almost, I suppose, it's a
hierarchy,
a metaphor for family life. Yes. And soon the building starts to break down. The lifts don't work. The food doesn't get delivered. Things are, it's this glossy, wonderful apartment. And soon it really turns into a war zone. And it's quite shocking what happens.
So is it like the crumbling of a society, sort of a fast forward?
It is. And I think the message here is that we're basically all survivalists anyway. We want to carry on and make our impact despite the fact that things aren't quite working. We may have to do terrible things to other people. But there also is a lot of denial in High Rise, where people kind of just carry on pretending that everything's kind of all right.
Well, for a film just set really in a high rise, the production values and the cinematography have to be very good. Can you talk a little bit about that?
It's really wonderful. I mean, Tom Hiddleston, of course, looks wonderful in a suit. And there's no bad lighting. You can't put bad lighting on this man. But I don't think it has a big budget, but I think that Ben Wheatley has made the most of the budget. And that's the great thing from coming from a low budget background. It looks amazing. The model making is great. And some of the way the scenes are put together are quite breathtaking. And I think visually, even if you don't agree with the story, you find it nonsensical or you find it too grating, it is just sensationally visual and cinematic.
Well, High Rose won't be opening this year, but do start looking out for it early 2016. Let's now end with Danny Boyle's Steve Jobs biopic. The life of the man behind Apple was first brought to the big screen back in 2013, but failed to hit the mark. In this new interpretation, we see Michael Fassbender take up the lead role with an all-star supporting cast. Now, does Danny Boyle do justice to the life of Steve Jobs?
Well, absolutely he does. This is a very, very exciting film, and it's exciting because, well, I don't want to. If you know a lot about Steve Jobs and about Apple, you will say, "Now wait a minute, this doesn't quite add up." Sorkin, Aaron Sorkin, who famous writer of West Wing, etc., said, "You know, journalists have an obligation to be objective. I have an obligation to be subjective." So his script for Danny Boyle's film is very much a what if. Behind the scenes, it talks about the creativity and also almost the maniacal genius of Steve Jobs.
Well, we're going to hear a little clip now from the film.
What do you do? You're not an engineer. You're not a designer. You can't put a hammer to a nail. I built the circuit board. The graphical interface was stolen. So how come 10 times in a day, I read Steve Jobs as a genius? What do you do?
Musicians play their instruments. I play the orchestra.
A great excerpt from the film Steve Jobs, directed by Danny Boyle. Now, you can almost hear the difference that Danny Boyle makes to a film. And great to have a British director tell this American story.
Yes, I think so. He's such a good director. He very rarely puts his foot wrong. And he can turn his hand to almost any genre there is. He's very, very successful in everything. And the good thing about Danny Boyle is that he really keeps the pace. He knows how to tell a story. So even something like this. And I mean, Michael Fassbender has been, I think, been used quite a bit. He's got to be quite careful. He's coming up in Assassin's Creed. He's doing the very, very, very dark Macbeth. And I think that this is a characterization for him to disappear into. It's quite a challenge, I think, to play an actor or to play a character who everybody knows, you know, what they look like. And also he said cheekily that he studied Ashton Kutcher's version of Jobs just to get this one right. But I think this is going to be a film that everybody's going to want to see, but everybody's going to have arguments with. And I think that that's the perfect kind of film. And that's the kind of film that Danny Boyle likes to make.
Steve Jobs was notoriously, as most geniuses are, difficult to work with. Does one come away liking him?
You admire him. I think people can say there's so much yelling in this film. Well, yeah, there's a lot of yelling and a lot of arguments because that's what it takes. And you have to remember that, you know, Apple's been around for many, many years, going through many different permutations. And you have to be single-minded with this. And there's all sorts of artifice here, things that didn't happen but should have happened, dramatically speaking. So it is satisfying, but there is, if you have a rough relationship at home or you're yelling with somebody, you know, maybe you might want to just see this some other time. There is a lot of irritating arguments, I'd say.
What Steve Jobs did bring to Apple was a great sense of theatricality and drama. For the release of every single product. How is that handled in the film?
Well, it is a great deal about behind the scenes. And you can see it actually kind of takes the gloss away because you see that he's giving, how can I say, his public or consumers a certain presentation, a certain viewpoint of the product, when actually behind the scenes it's pretty bloody, but it is interesting, and it shows us when you've got a unique viewpoint on things, you're not going to be understood, and you have to really just not care.
And it seems in the film they do manage to bottle a little bit of that hype and the expectation on the part of the consumer.
Huge. Yeah, huge. And the way that they get it right as well, and the way that they argue about the design of things and how things get capitulated and turned around. I mean, there's an argument about the design, whether it should be sealed or not sealed. And you think it's this little minutiae, the bits and bobs that really make this a story that's about something larger, about really, in short, creating a new future.
Well, the good news is you won't have to wait long for this film, as it's just opened in North America and is rolling out globally this winter. Well, that brings us to the end of today's show. Karen Krasanovich, thank you very much for joining us, as always. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Gillian DeBias. My producer was Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time on Monday for a look at the art scene in Italy. But for now, thanks very much for listening. Bye-bye.